Here we go. Welcome to Climate Matters. This is the first podcast and recording of 2020, and we are very pleased to have an old friend, Michael Corso, here, and really pleased to have you. Michael, how are you?
Great, Pete. Thanks, and really looking forward to working with you here on the show.
Absolutely, absolutely. So Michael has a long history of being a thought leader at the Department of Public Service. For those who are not aware, the Department of Public Service is the support arm for the Public Service Commission here in New York. And as a thought leader, Michael has been involved in some of the most significant actions of the commission over the last several decades. And I'll just put a couple out there and we'll start jumping into it. So Michael's been involved in electric deregulation back in the 90s. Michael's been involved very deeply in consumer protection and also in energy efficiency programs, particularly with relation to low-income customers. And that last one is where we'll be spending a lot of our time here because energy efficiency is so intrinsically linked to climate. So, Michael, before we get into low-income energy efficiency or the rest, can you flesh out the background beyond what I just laid out?
Sure. The low-income energy efficiency program, which was nicknamed ULEAP.
ULEAP?
That's because the first word is the letter U for utility. So what we did at the PSC is we developed a program where we were going to spend $10 million a year for 3 years for this pilot program, a total of $30 million. And this was approved by the commission in a case 89M124. So that's the 124th case of 1989, is how they're cataloged. And the implementation actually happened in 1990. Part of the commission's order was to develop a cooperative planning process with all the parties, the utilities, consumer advocates, external parties that conduct energy efficiency and alike. And we developed a program over a 6-month period, and it got implemented, and it was an incredibly successful program.
So in terms of the implementation, so for folks who might be coming at it from, I'm a customer, or folks who might be coming at it from the perspective of what kind of technology or efficiency action actually happens out there. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So the reason for the focus on low income is basically obvious, but I'll just say it for those who aren't following yet. The low income have the least money, the least amount of opportunity to provide themselves with energy efficiency in their homes. So the program was to develop a way to use grants and show savings beyond the cost. So we spent $10 million a year and we saved $12 million a year. So the program was net positive and there was a cash flow value to utility customers who were funding the pilot as well as the utility because it helped customers be able to pay better than they would have otherwise. As I like to say, they were providing heat for the pigeons and buttoning up their homes, and especially in the roof area where the greatest loss is, we sealed that up, buttoned that up, and it made a huge difference. The biggest thing that happened was to secure energy efficiency analysis, where you can do an audit of the home, develop a plan for how much money needs to be spent on what measures, and then you put together a cost-effective program for that home, and each home is different.
Right, right. And so when you were talking about the impetus, Michael, the impetus, you know, recognizing the affordability issue with the low-income customers that take advantage of it, were there also factors in terms of the fraction of their costs associated with energy and utility bills versus a middle-income or upper-income customer? So their income compared to their energy burden?
Yeah, that gets very complex very quickly when you start looking at mass numbers of customers and energy costs versus energy savings. But the bottom line really is that there were some values that the low-income consumers achieved better than middle and higher income because of payment ability or payment inability. So when you save money in a home where people have a hard time affording their energy costs, you reduce the price, sorry, you reduce the cost to that customer so they can actually pay more percentage of their bill, lowering terminations and reconnections, as well as providing comfort. So the you get that with middle and higher income families, but they don't have the sense of difficulty paying their bill. Mm. And that difficulty has a huge cost to the ratepayer, because if you don't pay your bill, the ratepayers pick up what you don't pay. And that becomes a very slippery slope very quickly on how much customers, general body of customers, has to pay for the losses that go to the utility. The utility can't really absorb that much in costs. It is designed, the system, to have people be able to pay.
Mm.
And as little debt as possible, so that debt doesn't grow and then add interest to pay off that debt, which raises rates.
Yep. So this initial pilot in 89 has come a long way since then. And I guess what I would ask you to do is to connect the dots from 89 to today, when so much of the discussion around climate is associated with equity issues and environmental justice issues. It strikes me that the Utility Low Income Program, or ULEAP, was sort of a trailblazer. Where did it go after that trailblazing? Did others follow? Did the commission continue to invest?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and quite well, I have to say. The pilot outcome was very strong, very successful. We made goals 6 months into a year. So we achieved where we were trying to go in a six-month period instead of a year. And Everything else was, quote-unquote, gravy off the goals. But in essence, the value proposition was that we were helping all ends of the spectrum. Everybody was getting a value from it, the ratepayer, but in general, the utility, and especially, of course, the low-income customer that could not afford their bills now can afford it better. Even if they could pay just the same as they did before, they've lowered the ceiling, the total cost, and the negative number is what goes down in terms of the cost in total. So it is not only been a great, strong program, but when I retired just about 2 years ago in 2018, we were spending upwards of $200 million across the state on just low-income energy efficiency.
And in addition to the spending, as you said earlier, the notion is that it's not simply saving energy. It brings multiple benefits, and it's again just stitching that connection back to climate change. Some serious climate change analysts, in seeking mitigation opportunities, are using the term called multi-solving. So you don't simply solve for the utility's interests or concerns in terms of uncollectibles, or simply in terms of the end-use customer, but you can actually get a win-win-win, and that's what I think you deserve to be quite proud of in helping to lead that effort.
Well, thank you for the compliment. Of course, it's always appreciated, especially when you get a compliment 30 years later. But I do appreciate Pete, because I knew you way back then and earlier, when we were struggling generally as a body of regulators. We tried really hard to develop the program so it would be a win-win-win, so we could actually achieve a goal, which was to have energy efficiency built in to our way of life.
Excellent. We have been speaking with Michael Corso, thought leader at the Department of Public Service and at the Public Service Commission here in New York, about low-income energy efficiency and a range of other issues. We will continue the conversation when we join you next time on Climate Matters. So, Michael, great to have you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Wonderful. Thank you.